Right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now. Did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com.
Today's episode of If These Ovaries Could Talk is brought to you by RX Bar. Welcome aboard, RX Bar. Oh my God, welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk.
Oh God, we're your idiotic hosts. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin, and we're, as always, we're setting the bar really high.
Hurt myself laughing.
Pulled something. Don't get old. You pull something breathing.
Well, although I was just told by my babysitter that I look like I'm in my late 20s.
Oh, you hold on to that, Jamie. Were you writing her a check at the time?
She gets cash. Okay.
Well, welcome to our podcast.
Talk about what's going on with us right now, Robin.
Well, I'm excited to announce that our publisher, Lit Riot Press, they put out a little a little news article about us.
I know, and it looks really cool and official.
And it had like new fancy headshots of ours up there. Did you see that?
Yeah, it's cool, and it talks about us, and it talks about the podcast, yeah. And it's got all our press up there.
It looks so official.
Great. It really does. It made me a little scared. Okay, this is actually happening.
We're actually doing a thing that's a thing. Do you know what I mean?
This is a thing, too.
I kind of feel like we're just like idiots who show up to microphones, and it's like somehow it's like a thing with reviews and thing. And when you see it all on paper, it's like, look at us.
I know. You know, we accomplished a lot in a year.
We should be nicer to ourselves. You think we could do that?
Let's talk about who we have coming in today.
Well, I'm excited. We have Camilla Brooks.
And this is going to be a really, I think, informative episode for everyone.
Well, all those interviews where people were talking about adoption or second parent adoption, and people are always fretting over the social worker visit.
Yes, and Camilla is a social worker who does home visits for adoption.
Because we're all afraid, like, we're being judged by them. Yeah. And, like, we want to know what's to expect. And so we thought, let's get Camille in here. But yeah. She's also, she's a woman who, a lesbian who adopted.
From another country.
Yeah. She's, I can't wait to hear. She's, like, packed full of secrets.
I know. I just feel like we're going to open up her brain.
I was just going to say, let's open her up. Isn't that so weird? Oh, I was thinking of a can opener.
Do you remember that show,
Harold's head. Somebody's head.
Henry's head? Howard's head? But we're going to get in Camilla's head and we're going to pull out her facts that she knows that we don't know, especially because I'm going through second parent adoption.
That's right.
And I got to get my ducks
in
a row.
Have you done your home visit yet?
No,
of course not.
No.
Of course not. Okay.
I'm not even close to that, but.
All right. Well, anyway, let's get Camilla in
here. Let's do it.
Hi, Camilla.
Hi.
Welcome.
Nice
Thank
to
you.
See you.
Nice to be here.
I was going to say welcome to our ovaries, but then that felt weird. welcome to my ovaries. So tell us about yourself.
I am a psychotherapist and a social worker, clinical social worker. My work is with adoption home studies, and I work mm-hmm. with families who are trying to create a family or with LGBT families mm-hmm. who want to do a second parent adoption.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which I'm in the process of doing right now. But I want to hear also your elevator pitch about your family.
My family is my wife and I, mm-hmm. and we have one daughter who is 21.
Oh, you made it out.
I did. I have done the journey.
And you seem like still together and everything. So this is, I'm already feeling hopeful.
My daughter wouldn't say so.
we'll have to get some words from her later.
My wife and I have been together for 30 years.
Good job. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a commitment.
30 years,
and
long
we got married after the last election. And we are both Caucasian. And our daughter is Chinese, adopted from China when she was 15 months old.
Well, I mean, that just feels like a perfect transition yes. to talking about your family. Like, let's talk about international adoption, how that was. And
yeah, we started thinking about this a little bit late. So
having babies?
Yeah.
When you say late, what ages were you?
I was in my 40s mm-hmm. and my wife was just almost 40. Okay. So we briefly entertained the idea of biological child, mm-hmm. but when that really became kind of a non-issue.
A little bit like dusty eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you actually go check out your
yes.
eggs? And
yes.
Yes.
And
were a lot of people, late 90s, were a lot of people having, a lot of us gays having babies back then?
There were. We knew a number of families. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was sort of the beginning.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Not the very beginning mm-hmm. at all. Because there were certainly people yeah. who right. went before us,
some
who
pioneers.
Inspired us.
But I feel like that at that time there was definitely adoption was the favored route. It seemed like, no?
Really?
Did I make that up?
Or were the gays just not, like, you know, it wasn't as normal of a thing for gays to have kids, or was it?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I think there were, my sense was that there were people really beginning mm-hmm. to.
Was it disclosed that you were a lesbian couple?
We did not.
Yeah.
I went forward as a single mm-hmm. Parent. Mm-hmm. We said we want to be parents, and this seems like a good option for yeah. us.
How did you decide who was going to be the one to go forward? Was there any like concerns like, hey, I want to do that?
I was more the driving force, mm-hmm. and sometimes that happens, but it's very important that the other member of the couple be comfortable with that.
Yes, of course. Spoken
and
like
that's something I also yes. explore
therapist.
With people when we're talking about adoption. Is, yeah. You know, that sometimes that happens. You know, it happens with biological
sure.
families too.
Yeah.
Right? That sometimes there's somebody who is really sort of the one in the
force.
Driver's seat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
So you, and I didn't ask, how long had you guys been together?
At that point, about 10 years mm-hmm. when we started the process.
So yeah. you knew each other pretty yeah. well by then.
Yeah.
One would hope.
I hope, yes.
Who are you?
Talk about what you remember most about your journey through the adoption process.
As with any adoption process, there's a lot of paperwork. Mm-hmm. International adoption is even more so. We actually started the paperwork in January 1997. And we completed our paperwork in July.
Wow.
It's like more than a mortgage.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I'm griping about the second parent adoption paperwork. Yeah, that
it is.
I have yet to fill out a single. Anne already did her whole side of it, and it's just sitting on my desk. Uh-huh.
And then I traveled to China a year later.
A year later.
Yeah. Okay, and there was a slowdown then. So, you know, it had been like 9 months prior to and afterwards, but I was in a slowdown period. And now it takes years.
Was it like a domestic adoption in that, like, all of a sudden one day you get the call, or was it more like there's this kid that's identified and
that? Yeah, there was a child who was identified, and how that's sort of the same thing. You get incredibly excited, and my wife, you know, got the FedEx package and talks about, you know, hugging the FedEx, you know, guy. And when she still sees him, you know, they wave.
She still sees the same guy?
Sometimes, yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah. So you fill out the paperwork. 9 months later, you get a FedEx package.
You know, it's not the same as carrying a child, but...
But you've been waiting.
We were waiting, and there was, you know, that was...
anticipation.
That was intense.
And how old was she when you brought her home?
15 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So you get the FedEx package.
Yeah.
What's in the FedEx package? Like, it says you have a child.
This child has been identified and you've been matched with this child. The agency called us and so on. So it wasn't just that.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
We had gotten word.
But inside that package, were there pictures and like things about her? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's... I mean, I would cry. I'm going to cry.
Of course, we were just over the moon.
Of course.
And how long is it from the FedEx package to going to pick up the kid?
I think it was about 6 weeks to 2 months.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
Okay. And where was she living? Was she living in like a...
She was in a child welfare institute, an orphanage. At that point, you were, and I think still the case, you're not allowed to travel to the agency. I mean, to the institute. It was about 2 or 3 hours from the hotel where we received. It was me and two other people were getting children that day.
Wow.
And that was intense. She was very different from the other kids. She was very sensitive. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a good thing. She was very attached to one particular caregiver. Oh. But it was also very hard because she was very, very upset because she was attached to her. And so, you know,
did she know what was happening? Was she old? She wouldn't have been old enough to.
No.
So it was just more like she just wanted to be with that caregiver. And all of a sudden you're the stranger and you're going God knows where.
It's like,
and you're like, I'm your mom.
You look different.
I look different.
Oh, right.
You know,
right.
I have curly blonde hair and, you know.
She might not have ever seen anybody like you.
Yeah. I mean, I would assume she hadn't.
So that was tough for you. Yeah.
That was really hard.
So they bring the kids in the room. And they bring all the kids in together? Or no?
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's, you know, a conference table and you're filling out, you know, tons of paperwork.
Like buying a house.
And you know, there's an interpreter and, you know, they...
Because she wouldn't even speak English either.
No.
She spoke Chinese. Was she speaking a lot or...
She understood, of course. She said one thing. I was traveling with a young woman who had actually spent the previous year in China and spoke Chinese. But one of the things that she was able to say was "bu yao," which means "don't want."
Oh,
was she saying that a lot?
She was saying that, yeah. Oh. And it was hard. It was a hard transition, and I was very grateful for this person who was traveling with me because she could speak to her. And she was pretty good.
Just like plying her with candy? I would have been. Not even lying. Want a lollipop?
There were little things that she liked. We found they were sort of like red bean wafers.
Uh-huh.
And
she liked them. She kept getting them.
Yeah. We had a stack of those.
Wow.
And then she finally fell asleep on the floor. I mean, we held her and then she fell asleep on the floor for a little while and then we got to New York and...
culture shock.
Yeah, culture shock. And my wife, then partner, was there. You know, she said the doors would open and they could see us. She was with our friend who had also adopted. the two boys, and they could, the, you know, the doors to the international section would open and they could see us in line and they would be waving madly. We didn't see them until we walked out.
But. Oh, that's amazing.
Wow. Yeah. And like, so, I feel like I would have been a sobbing mess this whole time.
Yeah. There was a day or night I was holding her in the hotel and... You know, she was crying and I was crying and I was on, you know, a phone call with my partner and it was a hard transition. But you know what? I have to say she was in many ways resilient. I mean, you think about all the ways that a 15-month-old has traveled on this journey and she was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're prime example for all the parents who might be going through this transition right now, it gets better.
It does get better. There, you know, there are ups and downs. Yeah. And
like, how long do you think it was before she felt like at home in your home with you guys?
It's really hard to say because there were like so moments. You know, I was going to say, you know, it was up and down.
Yeah.
You know, and there were moments when it was like, wow, you know, she's doing great. And then there were moments when... It was the adjustment. She had night terrors. I don't know if you guys have experienced that. But
I haven't.
I was lucky. Henry does yell out sometimes, but not.
Now, this is like crying, like yelling, crying hysterically. Mm. And there's
no language to probably even say what that was.
And they're not awake.
Right. Yeah. You know? You have to just kind of hold them. And,
right.
Yeah.
You know, arching back.
Yeah.
And, you know. Oh. But we found that having ice chips would sort of wake her up and, you know, and then she would go back to sleep.
Like, what'd you do with the
ice
chips?
Put them in her mouth?
Yeah.
Oh. I was like, are you putting them on the back of her neck? I was like, what's happening with the ice chips?
No, she would just take them. Well,
that's
her mouth.
A trick I'm going to I'm putting that in my toolbox because I might get these night terrors.
Rose could
still get them, I suppose.
Right. There's like an age when that happens. I want to say, but that, I mean, that, but this could have been attached to behavior anything. Or anything that happened. Yeah. Like, who knows? Right. You have like, No idea.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that, you know, in any adoption, really, there is a piece of loss.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that there is a first family or a first holding environment where that child was held.
Yeah.
And that's a loss that they have in their systems. And, you know, you
because
just have to
be aware.
Because she can't
go back to her family. She has no idea. Like, there's no, right? I mean, there's no connection. It's not open in any way.
Well, they're not that we know of.
Right.
I know there are families now who are using DNA.
I was just
going to
say like 23andMe type things.
Yep. Of identifying family. It doesn't happen often, but it has happened. And, you know, as this cohort of adoptees get older, some of them are going back and searching and I have read articles by girls who have done that and they, you know, that some who have not found their own biological parents have found parents who placed their children or
even just like the town where they came from. I mean,
right. But even talking to a parent who had placed their child someplace to be found that was very important for both of them, for the child and that parent to feel like they could see what happened.
Right.
Where they came from.
I saw a documentary about this young woman who was born in Vietnam and was adopted from Vietnam. She went back and found her whole family.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was a really emotional documentary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she had a lot of ups and downs. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
But it left me with this, I felt sad for her.
Mm.
Like in some ways, I think she even said, I wish I kind of hadn't seen them, but she had an interest. It was just a very interesting story. And if I could tell you the name of the documentary, I would. If there are listeners out there who know, throw it out to us.
Yeah.
It was a really interesting documentary, just seeing her go back to this village and they're still living in their lives. And she's so American and just really interesting.
Can we ask about your daughter? Does she have like where she is on this? Like, does she,
I have to also say whatever I say for her is my perspective on it, but
she can call in.
Yeah,
you're a good mom. Yeah, we can get her later.
She can call and correct everything you said.
Rebut it on social as well. Rebuttal.
That we did not do a return trip, but she has also said, you know, I might want to do that when I'm older.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes sense for her. And also, you know, that she feels this is her life. Mm-hmm. This is where she is. This is where she lives. These are her friends and mm-hmm. family. And
you gave her a good life.
Again, I would.
Go ahead.
I would want her to speak to that. You know what?
Oh my God, you're so modest. I know. I'd be like, I nailed it.
Yeah, of course you would.
I know. And my kids would be like behind me going, no, she didn't. That's why I have to be careful.
Robin, do you have to do that in the middle of our podcast?
I can't help it. I'm starving. It's snack time. And when I think of snack time, I think of RX bars.
Okay. Can you?
Okay. I'll stop. Yeah. I'm sorry. Okay. They're so good. I mean, I actually stole this one for my kid's snack stash. It's chocolate chip. Mm-hmm. And they also, P.S., for the kids, have PB&J, double chocolate chip, and peanut butter chocolate. I mean, those are the kids' flavors.
I know. They're really such a good snack on the go.
Kids and Robin flavors.
Oi, Robin. But listen, I do. I use them in Rose's school lunch mm-hmm. or after school or like the after school meltdown before I have to take her to her dance class. Like, mm-hmm. it's just like my backup go-to. I have one in my backpack at all times.
That is like critical snack time.
So critical.
Listen, I am just happy to be giving my kids a snack that doesn't start with the ingredient monoglucidocardioplastic cystic blah 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 blah.
No, for real, it actually says what's in it. It's only 3 egg whites, 6 almonds, 4 cashews, 2 dates. No BS.
I mean, no BS, Jamie. Isn't that just like us?
Somewhat, just like us.
We're no BS, Jamie. So here's what I say to our parents out there who are looking for snack options for their kids. I mean, I have tried them. We love them. Mm-hmm. And if you are sick of giving your kids dumb snacks that look like fish that happen to be gold, wink, wink, nod.
Which we all do.
Isn't that all I do? It's like in a Ziploc bag. If you're sick of doing that, RX Bar is offering you an exclusive pack of 6 adult bars and 4 kid bars so that the whole family is able to enjoy. For 25% off your first order, you just have to visit rxbar.com/OCT and enter the promo code OCT at checkout.
OCT.
Get it.
How did you talk about, since, I mean, you're kind of an expert on adoption, and I imagine you knew a lot about it back then, too. How did you talk to her about it? How did you guys navigate the whole?
It was, okay. And this is something I also tell people, especially, well, I tell people anyway, in any adoption, it's really important to, that you have a role as a parent of an adopted child to normalize it mm-hmm. 100%. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes from talking about it from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Absolutely. Yep. Right. Yes. From the beginning, this is the story. This is your story. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a wonderful story.
Yep.
And there are ways that, you know, we think about your birth mother, your birth family, and in adoption, there are many, many different ways that that plays out.
Mm-hmm.
That's their story.
Yeah.
You know,
you're
part of it, but it is their story.
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
And how you talk about that is really important, that isn't anything to be ashamed of, or
totally
that families are made in lots of different ways.
Yeah, that's how we talk about being a 2-mom family,
right.
Or
exactly.
The same thing.
Exactly.
You got to be open about it from the start.
Exactly.
I don't know if everybody feels that way though.
Right.
I feel like we're forced to do that. Mm-hmm. Like it's because we are 2 moms or 2 whatever, you know, like I think I've said this before. I know someone who used donor eggs and hasn't told her kid. And the kid's got to be 12 at this point. And when that kid finds out, and they will find out, it's going to go sideways.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you got to get in front of it. Like you said, it normalizes it too.
Right. But it's also important to value that, right?
Yeah.
You're saying this was important part of who you are and to communicate to the kid that that's okay. And that's of value.
And you're proud of it. And it's beautiful.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I do think also it is easier on some level for LGBTQ families because we have had to deal with that.
Yep.
Our whole
issue.
Yeah.
Right.
Ever since we've been out,
we
have to decide if we come out to the taxi driver.
Coming out all the time.
You're
coming out all the time.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's actually a strength that LGBTQ families have.
That's a nice spin on it.
Yeah.
you know, that yes, and you have had experience dealing with stereotypes and everything else, and you know, that is helpful for kids.
Mm-hmm. You get comfortable by having the conversation. That's how it happened for me.
Yep.
The more I talked about it, the more comfortable I became.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Was that also the case with race? Like, did you have issues around that, or how was that?
That was also something, you know, I think that's really important in transracial adoptions, which do happen in domestic adoptions. I work with that a lot. Talking about difference, talking about race, talking about, you know, in age-appropriate ways,
sure,
right? Mm-hmm. You're going to talk to a 3-year-old differently from the way you're going to talk to a 10-year-old or a 16-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be prepared. You know, that's your work as a parent is what I feel. You know, you have to talk about, okay, you have an adorable, you know, biracial, African-American, you know, Mexican child, and your white parents, you know, that child is going to be out in the world at some point by themselves, and you have to be able to help them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to give them tools.
When a 4-year-old says, why is your mommy white?
Yep.
Yeah. And they need to have the tools, right?
What kind of tools would you give them?
I will tell you a funny story about my daughter. There was, she was in the playground and a kid said, is that your mom? She doesn't look like you. Mm-hmm. And my daughter said, well, she's not Chinese. Which I thought was, it was like so obvious and so much from her perspective, you know? Yeah, she's not Chinese.
She's
so
my mom.
That's
obvious. She's not Chinese, whatever.
Yeah.
She's my mom.
Duh.
Yeah, it's like, duh, hello.
Because to her, it was it's just normal. This is my mom and, you know, moms don't always look like their babies.
Right. Exactly.
And that's the way it is.
And that came from, I mean, that was probably when she was 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, I think that came out of a lot of, you know, conversations and her story. And
how does she identify?
Again, you know, I don't want to speak for her, but I will just give my perspective on it. I think, as with many transracially adopted kids who live in, you know, fairly white communities, I think there is a kind of divide on that, you know, that there is part of them that feels, you know, comfortable in a, or somewhat comfortable in a white environment, and also feels very much identified as whatever identity, you know, feels strongest to them.
Yeah.
I think my daughter very much celebrates her Chinese identity, but is also knows that that's not, you know, she's not in a Chinese family.
Right.
Most of her friends now are non-white. Uh-huh. And that sort of really began to happen in high school.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, growing up in New York City, she was raised the whole time. Well, you say that you did your best to like infuse your lives with Chinese culture if you could. Like for another family that might have a young adopted child from China, what were some of the, do you remember any of the other things that you did to kind of like meld the two cultures together, or how much time did you focus on that?
I would say it wasn't, you know, the major focus of our lives, but for some people it's more so, you know, I think it depends on the family. And I think, you know, we celebrate Chinese New Year. We spend time with Chinese friends, but we're not steeped in the culture in any deep way. I think also, you know, to the point when people are adopting transracially, I think it is really important to have people in your life who are similar in, you know, race and culture to the child you're adopting. And I think whether that's, you know, friends or teachers, practitioners, your neighborhood, the kinds
just
of things
sure
you do.
Making sure they can see themselves in people
or like
around.
If there's like a cultural center in the neighborhood, you know, if you don't have any.
Yeah. I mean, we just sent our daughter she went to sleepaway camp this summer for the first time, and she went to this place called Camp Highlight, and it's all kids from gay families or non-traditional homes. Yeah. And we thought that was important because we, you know, we have a few friends who have gay families, but it's not, weren't for the most part, we just sort of are in our regular world, and we wanted them to have other kids that are like them.
Mm-hmm.
So that just, you know, because I think there's one other gay family in our school. That's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm surprised.
I know. In it's New very York? Surprising. Especially wow. It's like a little hippy dippy liberal school, but it's...
Yeah, we have one family that was in the pre-K and is going into kindergarten and they have a little girl. And we keep trying to get them to be like, friends hi. And they are not interested in one another. Like they know. I'm like, she has two moms too. I say everything I can to get her to be friends with, and it's not happening. No.
they choose who yeah, they want to
so
be with.
So funny.
We had maybe three families in our pre-K and lots of biracial adopted
really?
Kids in our pre-K. Yeah. It was wow. amazing. It was a wonderful.
That
wonderful
is great.
Place.
Are you still close with those friends that you made? Those
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like those are the yeah. foundations that last, yeah. right?
I think, and I love that about preschool or pre-K, mm-hmm. whatever it is, that you do, you're sort of becoming,
yeah.
you know, you're sort of sharing this
figuring
journey
it out. Yeah.
and figuring it out. And you're...
Those are the parents we're closest with were from Henry's yeah. Twos program.
Yeah.
Not so much the...
The threes, of course.
Or the later, like the uh-huh. elementary school, less uh-huh. so.
I feel like uh-huh. it's going to happen for us in kindergarten. It didn't happen so oh, much in pre-K.
That's
I'm just
sad.
Hoping.
Someone's going to like you guys, Jamie.
Guys?
Somebody is.
No, I think I'm going to be really good friends with the two lesbian moms. So throwing it out there, ladies.
Uh-huh. Let's talk about your social work, like your the home study stuff. Like,
yeah.
interested in telling us a little bit about that?
Yeah. Do you want to know the process for, I mean, do you think that yeah, would be
totally.
Useful
totally.
For people?
I mean,
people?
Being
yeah.
somebody who personally yes. is going through second yes, parent adoption and I can't even get started on the
we're
paperwork.
So proud of
we just had good our meeting you. With Brian Esser. And when I say just, it was about 3 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And Anne has her paperwork.
And
done.
Anne has done her paperwork. I have to still do mine. We still have other things yeah. that need to, because there's a lot of, you yep. got to get like all of your addresses for the past.
Yeah. 22
I
years.
Get on, like,
years.
I had to get on Google Maps because yeah. I moved 19 yeah. times
I know.
Since I've been in New York.
Yeah, yeah.
We're actors. Yeah. I've been all yeah. over the place.
I was moving like every year. I yeah. always got a better apartment, but it was yeah. like I was just kept moving and I was like
I
on
didn't.
Google Maps. I had to call yeah. a couple ex-girlfriends. I'm like, where did we live? Remember that place in Flushing? What was that?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. yeah.
That's the, I'm yeah. hoping that the sublets
oh, how
don't
are
matter.
You too, by the way?
Right. And then when you do the home study, there'll be a little more.
Right. And then we have yeah. to dig into that home study because yeah. I have to have one. Yeah. I'm so yeah. nervous. And yeah. I know I shouldn't be.
No,
but,
no okay. you shouldn't be at all.
Because you are judging people, right?
No.
So that's what we're all afraid of, is right. that
I know. Us. And everybody's afraid of that. And everybody's very nervous. But there are two things. One is, you know, the difference between just a straight adoption and a second parent adoption. You know, with a second parent adoption, you've already been parents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is the vehicle that we have to secure
yes.
families. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the problem is you're already very successful at yeah. being families. And it feels like a bit of intrusion.
Yes, right.
So
it's hard to look at it like a good thing that yeah. you get to do it,
yeah.
you know, versus... Yeah.
We have to do
yeah,
it.
You're yeah, you're forcing me to do something that we wouldn't have to do.
Right, if we were straight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I can talk about second parent adoption.
Yeah, let's do that. And then we can talk about right. regular adoption.
Right, right.
I don't
so
know,
second parent adoption, I mean, it's the same in that a social worker has to come to your house mm-hmm. and has to interview you and your partner or spouse, both together and separately. And if your kids are old enough to have a brief conversation with mm-hmm. your kids.
Oh,
if
that's
they,
hilarious.
If they understand.
I'm so excited for you or whoever it is to talk to my daughter.
Right. Well, no, it just would be, you know, if they were really capable of understanding.
I think
that
it would go something
sort of,
like, so Rose, you have two moms. I have two poops. Right. Something to that effect.
Yeah. 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 She's in the...
okay. Normal. Bye.
Right.
Yeah.
So there is paperwork. Basically, the home study has a certain format. I ask people about their decision to adopt, which usually in second parent adoption is to secure the legal relationship of the non-biological parent. And, you know, just sort of how they came to create a family and what that process was like for them. We look at your own family background. You know, there is an autobiographical piece of the, particularly of the adoptive parent, but also I include bio information about the biological parent also. So that's just about what was important, you know, growing up, who was your family, your sibs, what's your relationship like with them? If, you know, your parents are still alive, what's, you know, what's their role in your life now? What was important when you were growing up? Also, you know, just about your child now and also the process of how they were conceived and born and what they're doing now, what, you know, school or whatever, and what your parenting style is, you know, what's important to you in raising a child. Financial information, employment information. In some courts, there are requirements for reference letters.
Yes.
But not in all courts.
We did that.
Yeah. We have to have reference letters.
Right. And about your community, your home. People are really, you know, afraid that, you know, their home isn't clean enough or their home isn't perfect enough.
If I didn't clean before you came.
Put on my white gloves.
What would you, like, if you came in and my house was a complete mess, which it gets, you know, with two kids, would there be any negative notches on that whatsoever?
No.
See, I'm still going to clean it like spick and span.
Of course you are.
You know? Don't need to. Really.
But I'm crazy anyway. Yeah. I like a clean house anyway.
You're hitting on something that I've been thinking about as you were answering, like, what we have to do. So as a gay woman who, I mean, I'm making an assumption, not about you being gay because you said the wife thing.
Yes. Thank you.
I mean, because it seems sort of obvious. But like, what if someone was just like, you'd be like, oh, you're not a great parent, or, you know, like, who maybe shouldn't be parents, like, and they don't, no one has to come in and judge them. So it's like, what if somebody showed up and like, is there an ethical dilemma for you? Because I don't know, because this is a thing we have to do, but they already made the baby. Just, do you know what I'm saying? Like, nobody's coming into the bad family, you know, and taking away their kid. So it's like, is there a weird line there?
It's very rare that somebody who's, you know, gotten this far is, you know, is not approved to be an adoptive parent. Certainly it happens, but there have to be pretty severe reasons for that, usually related to child endangerment.
Like, you walk in the apartment and there's a crack pipe on the counter. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that's ever happened. I'm just like trying to come up with the, that might be a reason that you might say, not the best home for this child, right?
You know, there are, I think what is really important is when parents are doing an adoption home study is that they are honest with the social worker, because you wouldn't want something to come up later, like say on a fingerprint check,
right,
that you didn't tell the social worker or the lawyer or whoever you're working with, because that looks much worse.
Right. And I can see how, I think in my head, I'm thinking, oh my God, of course I'd be honest, but what else? But I can see how it might be scary to share things from your past that are all over and it's done, but you even saying it out loud, it's so scary to say it to someone because of the judgment that might come. Right. And then, oh my God, what if they tell me I can't be a parent because I have this random, I don't even know what it could be.
Well,
but
I got arrested in college.
There you go.
For fake ID. Because, I mean, we were all drunk. It was college. That's what we did.
Right. And that's so scary to say.
But I did some program called this, like, diversion program where you basically, because, I mean, it was a Cornell and Ithaca. It's like 50,000 people in the town, 25,000 were students. Right. I mean, how many people are getting arrested all the time? So they had to have some, like, program to, like, you know, like, just go do some community service. And then it was supposed to be closed. And I had at this volunteer organization, they did my fingerprints and it came back. So I had to, like, before the thing, I went and made sure it was sealed and closed. But now I'm thinking about it. I don't think I told anybody about that. No, really? I guess I probably should have.
I would have asked.
I made sure it was sealed, I think. But now I think that was dumb and I should have just told the truth.
Right. Like, disclose everything.
I bought a six-pack of beer, for God's sakes. It was just dumb. Right.
That happens a lot.
Yeah.
I will tell you, that happens a lot. And even though it's sealed.
People getting arrested in college?
Or they're, you know,
they didn't
minor,
tell you.
Minor infractions. And somebody will say, well, yeah, I was picked up for, you know, putting up a poster on
stealing a sign.
You know? And I said, well, you know, I'm going to write that in, even though it's very minor. It has no, you know, because what I also say is, since that time, there has never been any incident of, you know, arrest or conviction.
Of hanging posters.
Arrest or conviction. Yeah, I mean, that is something that I ask. And, you know, sometimes it's even more serious. And yet if there's evidence of change, and that's what's really what important. If somebody has an arrest record and yet they are clearly a really good parent, that's greater evidence to me than what they did when they were, you know, 22.
I mean, that's encouraging. You know, do you hear that, guys at home? It's okay. Just tell them. Tell them everything. It's not going to be. It's scary.
But it is scary. I,
you know,
right.
It's scary. It is. To like, divulge
I'm
random
thinking if
things.
I would have wanted to have said something, if I would have just been afraid that. I mean, I wasn't doing the adoption though. Mary was, because I had the kids. So maybe that's.
So you weren't as.
I didn't know. She had to be fingerprinted. Right. I didn't have to. Yeah, that's right. Now I'm thinking about
that. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, I'm going to have to get fingerprint. We're both going to have to because we both had one.
Oh, right.
Oh, you're doing it at the same time. Two for one.
Yeah, good. Twofer. Do you have any tips for non-traditional families in terms of this area?
Be honest. And
relax.
Yeah, really relax, because it's really, I mean, I'm sorry that we have to do this, but it is a good insurance. It's insurance. Yeah, it's important. If you travel, if you move to another state, even if you don't think that's ever going to happen, you don't know what's going to happen in 10 years. Yep. And also just the issue of inheritance. Mm-hmm. People can do funny things.
Yeah, you're making me feel really bad. I haven't filled that paperwork out.
You're going to go home and you're going to do it.
I'm going to do it.
You got this.
I'm going to do it.
Little bit at a time.
Yes.
When I was doing mine, I was like, okay, I'm going to make a list, but I'm just going to do one thing on the list. Like this week, I'm going to get this one thing done.
I know. I got to do it. I will. Don't worry, guys.
Break it down.
Don't worry, guys.
Well, I feel like we learned a lot today. I feel like you're a fantastic mom. If you're this like calm
you're very
and like
kind.
You are.
Talk to my daughter.
Methodical.
I think your daughter. I mean, from what I hear, your daughter sounds very well adjusted.
She's amazing.
You say scary anymore. Having like
you got to take some credit for that. I'm just saying.
You and your wife.
She is who she is. And also, I mean, yeah, you're right. In New York. You send them out in high school or even middle school and they're commuting by themselves.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God.
They're in the subway at 12 by themselves.
I know. Well, Robin her kids are making bodega runs.
They are. We just started
on their
that.
Own.
Yesterday they went out to look at cell phone cases. They don't have phones, but I was like, we don't need anything from the deli. And they were like, can we go to that store to look at cell phone cases? I was like, 10 minutes, go. And they went. It was hilarious.
Oh my goodness.
I want to ask you if there's anyone in the New York area that needs your services. Are you like, do you have social or any information you could share with the audience? Like, because you do home studies for people.
I do. And my website is CamillaBrooks.com. And there's information about contacting me and about adoption and what home studies are about.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Great.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Yes. You guys, you're fantastic.
Wow.
Oh, I loved Camilla.
Me too. I feel good.
Yeah. I mean, she was a great lady. She had like that therapist way of talking, which I loved. And I just loved how it's just do the home visit. It's all going to be fine.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be all right.
I know. I feel good. And what a good mom and what a good lady.
Oh. Anyway. Thanks for coming in, Camilla. We enjoyed having you.
Yes. If you guys want to reach out to us about anything, about something regarding this episode or really just anything, which people just kind of email us now sometimes.
I know.
Things about their lives, which is nice.
But like put it on the social media.
Yeah.
Or by the way, don't be afraid to send us a 1 minute or less clip of something you want to talk about from a previous episode or just, you know, share your love for us and we might put it in an episode.
Yeah.
Why
not? You might as well reach out.
How do they do that, Tammy?
Well, they can reach us at the Book of the Face, which is what I call Facebook at If These Ovaries Could Talk, Instagram, ovaries _ talk, Twitter at ovaries talk. And they can always just email us, you guys. You can email us at
ovariestalk@gmail.com.
Also, a big thanks to RX Bar.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, RX Bar. I'm sorry I was eating your snacks in the middle of our episode to our listeners, but they're so darn good.
Yeah.
Don't forget to use your promo codes that we gave you for your purchase.
Do that. Helps us out, helps them out. So go for it. Anyway, I think that's it.
All right. Well, listen, we hope we'll be more together next week. How about that?
How about that?
Is that a promise? Can we keep it?
Yes.
We got this. Eggs.
Ovaries. Out.
Ovaries could talk, they would say. Eggs, ovaries, out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.